शुशिवमासीनम्
तस्मिन् महायोगमाये
ददृशिवमासीनम्
दत्तावश्यं विवान्तकम्
तस्मिन् महायोगमाये
मुमुक्षुचरणे सुरा
ददृशु शिवम् आसीनम्
दत्तांशं विवान्तकम्
तस्मिन् महायोगमाये
मुमुक्षु शरणं सुरा
ददर्शु शिवम् आसीनम्
तत्तामशं विवान्तकम्
तस्मिन्
अण्डर् द ट्री
महायोगमाये
हेविङ्ग् मेनि सेजस् एङ्गेज्ड् इन् मेडिटेशन् आन् द सुप्रीम्
having many sages in meditation action
of the supreme
mumukshu mumukshu
desiring liberation
sharane
sharane
shelter
sura
sura
demigod
demigod
dadrushu
dadrushu
sa
sa
shivam
shivam
lord shiva
lord shiva
asinam
asinam
sita
sita
takta amarsham
yera amarsham
having given up anger
having given up anger
yuga
yuga
as Antakam,
Antakam,
eternal time.
Eternal time.
Translation, demigods saw Lord Shiva sitting under that tree which was competent to give perfection to mystic yogis and deliver all people. As great as time eternal, he appeared to have given up all anger. Purport, in this verse the word Maha Yogamaya is very significant. Yoga means meditation on Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Maha Yoga means those who engage in devotional service of Vishnu. Meditation means remembering smaranam. There are 9 different kinds of devotional service, which smaranam is one process. The yogi remembers the form of Vishnu within his heart. Thus, there are many devotees engaged in meditation on Vishnu under the big banyan tree. The Sanskrit word maha is derived from the affix mahat. This affix is used when there is a great number of quantities, so maha yoga means indicates that there were many great yogis and devotees meditating on the form of Lord Vishnu. Generally, such meditators desire the liberation from material bondage, and they are promoted to the spiritual world to one of the Vaikunthas. Liberation means freedom from material bondage or nesshas. In the material world, we're suffering life after life because of our bodily identification. Liberation is freedom from that miserable condition of life. Lord Shiva sat there, surrounded by saintly persons like Kuvera, the master, the Guyagas, and the four Kumaras, who were already liberated souls. Lord Shiva was grave and saintly. Her part of the personality sitting with the Lord Shiva was significant because the four Kumaras were liberated from birth. And if you remember that after their birth, these Kumaras were requested by the father to get married and beget children or to increase the population of the newly created universe. But they were refused, and at that time Lord Brahma was angry. In that angry mood, Rudra or Lord Shiva was born. Thus they were intimately related. Kuvera, the treasure of the demigods, is fabulously rich. Thus, Lord Shiva's association with the Kumaras and Kuvera indicate he had all transcendental and material opulences. Actually, he is the qualitative incarnation of the Supreme Lord, therefore his position is very exalted. Text 35, the demigods saw Lord Shiva situated in his perfection as the master of the senses, knowledge, fruit of activities, and the path of achieving perfection. He was the friend of the entire world, and by virtue of his full affection for everyone, he was very auspicious. Purport, Lord Shiva is full of wisdom and tapasya, austerity. One who knows the modes of work is understood to be situated on the path of devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One cannot serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead unless one has achieved full perfectional knowledge in the ways and means of performing devotional service. Lord Shiva is described here as Adishwara. Adishwara means controller, and Adishwara means particularly controller of the senses. Generally, our materially contaminated senses are apt to engage in sense gratificatory activities. But when a person is elevated by wisdom and austerity, the senses then become purified and then become engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Shiva is the emblem of such perfection, and therefore in the scriptures it is said, Vaishnavanam Yathasambhu. Lord Shiva is a Vaishnava. Lord Shiva, by his actions within this material world, teaches all conditioned souls how to engage in devotional service 24 hours a day. Therefore, he is described here as Loka Mangala, good portion personified for all conditioned souls. He was seated under deer skin and was practicing all forms of austerity. Because his body was smeared with ashes, he looked like an evening cloud. On his hair was a sign of a half moon, a symbolic representation. Therefore, Lord Shiva's symptoms of austerity are not exactly those of a Vaishnava. Lord Shiva is certainly the number one Vaishnava, but he exhibits features for a particular class of men who cannot follow the Vaishnava principles. The Shaivites, the devotees of Lord Shiva, generally dress like Lord Shiva, and sometimes they indulge in smoking and taking intoxicants. Such practices are never accepted by the followers of Vaishnava rituals. He was seated on a straw mattress and speaking to all present, including the great sage Narada, to whom he specifically spoke about the absolute truth. Report: the Lord was sitting on a mattress of straw because such a sitting place is accepted by persons who are practicing austerities to gain understanding of the absolute truth. In this verse, it is specifically mentioned that he was speaking to the great sage Narada, a celebrated devotee. Narada was asking Lord Shiva about devotional service, and Lord Shiva, being the topmost Vaishnava, was instructing him. In other words, Lord Shiva and Narada were discussing knowledge of the Vedas, but it is to be understood that the subject matter was devotional service. Another point in this connection is that Lord Shiva is the supreme instructor, and the great sage Narada is the supreme audience. Therefore, the supreme subject matter of Vedic knowledge is bhakti, or devotional service. His left leg was placed on his right thigh, and his left hand was placed on his left thigh. In his right hand he held rudraksha beads. His sitting posture is called virasana. He sat in the virasana posture, and his finger was in the mode of argument. Purport: the sitting posture described here is called virasana according to the system of Astanga Yoga performances. In the performance of yoga, there are eight divisions such as yama and niyama, controlling, following the regulated principles, and practicing the sitting postures, etc. Besides Virasana, there are other sitting postures such as Padmasana and Siddhasana. Practice these asanas without elevating oneself to the position of realizing the Super Soul Vishnu is not the perfectional stage of yoga. Lord Shiva is called Yogeshvara, master of all yogis. And Krishna is also called Yogeshvara. Yogeshvara indicates that no one can surpass the yoga practice of Lord Shiva, and Yogeshvara indicates that no one can surpass the yoga perfection of Krishna. Another significant word is Tarka Mudra. This indicates that the finger is open and the second finger is raised, along with the arm, to impress the audience with some subject matter. This is actually a symbolic representation. Translation: demigods saw Lord Shiva sitting under that tree, which was competent to give perfection to mystic yogis and deliver all people. As grave as time eternal, he appeared. We have given up all anger. So this is a description of what the Devatas and Lord Brahma saw when they went to request Lord Shiva to forgive them for all their offenses. So this is a typical description of Shiva. He is, of course, in that very peaceful place under the banyan tree, sitting, surrounded by a very remarkable place of persons like the Kumaras, Narada Muni, and Kuvera, and other persons. And the description is given, he's on a deer skin as if practicing meditation. He has ashes on his body, a half moon in his hair. He has a certain posture of his legs. His asana is described, and his mudra, or his finger position, is described. Not only that, but he is talking to Narada, in which there is questions and answers. We see here that Shiva is engaged in giving instructions to Narada Muni. Narada Muni is an incarnation of the Lord, a Shakti Vaish avatar, and his Shakti is Bhakti. So he's got special powers of Bhakti. The Kumaras are also Shakti Vaish avatars. Their special power is Jnana, so they teach Jnana. So we see here around Shiva are actually avatars of the Lord, but they are actually Jivas who have special powers, Shakti Vaish powers. So and they are gathered around listening to Lord Shiva. So we see Lord Shiva has great respect among even the avatars of the Supreme Lord. So he's in a very great position. So in one sense this is apt because the Narada and Kumaras are Jivas and Shiva is not a Jiva. So in that sense we can say that it is proper that they hear from Lord Shiva because he's a form of the Supreme Lord. At the same time we should understand that because Narada and the Kumaras are Avesh, they do have great powers also, independently, so they don't depend on anyone. So therefore they're put in the category of avatars, even though they're Jivas. So they have a very special power, and they're not normal Jivas at all. They're eternal. They have eternal forms, spiritual world, and they have these special powers. So they're also very extraordinary. And we'll see that often in the Bhagavatam, we'll see that the Kumaras are giving instructions to the sages, or Narada Muni is giving instruction to sages or to Prajapatis, Manus, etc. So they're all very, very capable persons, whether it's Shiva or the rest. And here they're engaging in a conversation. Because they're all highly elevated, therefore they're speaking elevated topics also, discussing about the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada has mentioned in the purport that because Narada Muni is talking to Lord Shiva, Shiva is greatest Vaishnava and Narada Muni's incarnation of Bhakti, Shakti has Bhakti Shakti, then they had to be talking about Supreme Lord and Bhakti, nothing else. Though most people in the material world, or most people in India, they think that Lord Shiva is meditating on Brahman or something all the time. Here we see that Lord Shiva actually is engaged in devotional discussions. So just as the devotees engage in Harikatha, talks about the Supreme Lord. So the exalted devotees like Narada and Shiva also engage in such discussions. So though these are part of sadhana, hearing is part of sadhana, shravanam. Still, it is also part of perfection. So, in the spiritual world, they do not give up the hearing process. So the devotees in the spiritual world do kirtan, they chant, and they also hear. So it's not something that is given up after sadhana is finished. So if the Kumaras and Narada and Shiva are engaged like this in Shravanam and Kirtanam, that does not mean they're doing sadhana. That is simply a sign of their exalted position as Nitya Siddha devotees of the Lord. So such activities are performed in the spiritual world, and they have great power in the spiritual world to increase the bliss there. And similarly in the material world, on the level of sadhana, even though we're not perfect, still these processes like kirtan and shravanam have great power as well. So they're actually eternal activities, and they appear within the material world. So here they appear like material activities, but actually they're not. They're actually eternal activities, eternal processes, and we practice them in the material world as sadhana. And by that sadhana, they end up in a perfect state, in prema. So we'll often see that these discussions are glorified. In fact, we'll see the whole Bhagavatam is a discussion. The sages of Naimisaranya are speaking to Suta Goswami. And they're discussing questions and answers, whatever. And then we have discussion between Parikshit and Sukadeva. Sukadeva speaks, Parikshit asks questions and listens. So again, we have the same information point. And then within that, we have other discussions, for instance, between Maitreya and Vidura, or Narada Muni and others. So we have that, or Krishna and Uddhava in the 11th canto again. So we have continual discussions going on of questions and answers, etc. So this is a spiritual process, practiced, not practiced, but actually performed by perfect devotees in the Lord Himself, and also practiced by those who are not perfect in order to gain perfection. So the hearing process, as well as the chanting process, is a means for perfection. It's also perfection itself. It's both things. Other processes are not like that. Jnana is a means. Liberation is the end. There is no jnana in liberation. You don't practice jnana anymore. Yoga is a practice. Liberation is the goal. You don't practice yoga once you get liberation. You don't do pranayama in liberation. So the means and the end are different. But not the same in bhakti. So the processes themselves are very special. The processes are the means, plus they are the end in perfection state. That shows that they are in a much higher position than the other processes which you've given up. That means they're actually spiritual processes. The other processes are given up, why? Because they're material. Again, and yoga are material. They have to be given up to get liberation. Hearing and chanting and remembering, they're not. They are spiritual processes. They're not given up. They're part of perfection itself. But that shows that the processes themselves are different. The other processes are in the gunas, bhakti is beyond the gunas. What is the difference between the hearing in the pure state and hearing in sadhana? There is a difference, therefore we call them different names. We call one sadhana bhakti, we wouldn't call the other one prema bhakti. So there is a difference in that sense. But the process is the same, the activity is the same. The only difference is the purity and intensity of the act. So when the action of hearing is perfect, with no material contaminations and 100% attraction to the Lord, then it is called prema. And when it is less than that, it would be called sadhana. So this is these processes are actually eternal processes. So this hearing and speaking and hearing process is there, we see in the Bhagavatam, between all the different persons. In order to get knowledge on one level for those who are sadhakas, and it's also in the part of perfection itself. So the hearing process should not be considered imperfect or material, it's actually a spiritual process. So we hear properly, even though we are hearing with ears which look material. Somebody is speaking with a tongue and a voice which is material. It looks material, but actually it's not. Hearing, the whole hearing process, speaking process is spiritual. Kirtan is spiritual. Hearing is spiritual. So we should not be deceived by the appearance of things. Why is it spiritual? Because it is part of bhakti. Because of the shakti of bhakti, it is not normal. It is not the normal hearing or speaking. It is much, much different. And where does the shakti come from? It comes because of the devotion. A person has devotion, then there is that shakti. Therefore, it is said, if a Vaishnava, one who is not a Vaishnava, has no devotion, speaks, it has nothing in it. It is material. So you speak Bhagavatam, but you're not a devotee, it is material sound. Material hearing, material kirtan. If one is a devotee, then it becomes spiritual. So if it's from the materialist, what is it? It's like milk with poison in it, which means material effect. And if it's spoken by a devotee, the same topic, same Bhagavatam, then it's without the poison. So milk without the poison, what does it do? It nourishes. It is beneficial. So it has spiritual effect. So the same topic coming from the wrong place will have different effects. If it comes from the materialist, material effect. If it comes from the devotee, devotional effect. So therefore, the speaking process and the devotees are very important. And we hear from devotees. So this whole process of devotional association is also very important. It's from them that we get the actual spiritual nature of the Bhagavatam.
Bhagavatam itself being spiritual, how come it gets material person who is material?
Well, it is hidden. Just like you go to the Dham, and if you're materialist, you're not there. You go to the Dham, but you're not in the Dham because you're in a material place. And if you're spiritual, then you're in a spiritual place. So the potency of Bhagavatam is it hides from the materialist and it reveals itself to devotees.
Once somebody after sadhana reaches to the level of spiritual world, then they have a perfect knowledge. Then why the knowledge continues coming, hearing process continues there? Because they already reached the perfect knowledge, that's why they are able to be there in the spiritual world.
Oh, in the spiritual world, they're not actually looking for knowledge, but the hearing and the chanting, etc., are expressions of their prema. In other words, they hear, and the hearing itself is actually a type of service to the Lord. By hearing about the Lord, they're actually glorifying the Lord. And by speaking about the Lord, they're glorifying the Lord. So for them, that is a very wonderful activity to hear about Krishna. So we'll see in the Bhagavatam, the devotees hear about Krishna in Vrindavan. They hear about Krishna when they cannot see him, and they become full of joy on hearing about his activities. So that it's not an attempt to get any knowledge as such, but it is simply an opportunity for them to appreciate Krishna more. So they can appreciate by the eye, by seeing, but they can also appreciate by hearing. So their appreciation increases their attraction to Krishna and their love of Krishna.
Yeah, but
yeah.
But then we can like Krishna, we are not getting higher taste, and we will just taste in the teeth and
well,
in the kappa.
Well, actually, it should be in all things. In all angas of bhakti, ultimately, they will give higher taste. Whether it is even angas like offering obeisances or deity worship or anything. Because they're angas of bhakti, they produce more bhakti. If they don't, that means we might be doing them wrong. Process has been done wrong. So we have to see that we do them properly, that's all.
So they're not getting the taste.
Yeah. Well, if we're following correctly, then eventually we should become purified and get the taste. That's all. It takes time, of course, but through the process, then one develops more and more attraction. In the beginning, attraction is very little. When we have faith, we have very little attraction. But then if we go through the stages of, you know, Narchana Vritti, Nishtha Ruchi, Asakti, that attraction becomes, taste becomes more. And it becomes very positive in Ruchi, and it becomes very prominent in Asakti stage, those two stages.
So there's a stage in Jabhatari,
the offenses. Yeah, free from offenses, good association, determined practice, and supported by the other processes like hearing.
People are controlled by the mother,
Well, eventually, if they keep practicing, the process of bhakti itself will purify them, provided they don't commit offenses and they continue the practice. That should help, because they go through anartanavritti. The process of bhakti itself will purify and increase their attraction.
But as long as they have to feed in the heart of passion in front of,
well, if they're stuck there, then that's a problem. So that becomes the 10th offense to the holy name. Even after understanding everything, you keep your material attachments there, so then you don't progress. You have no determination to give up anything in the material world. Then you cannot progress. That means the faith is very little, and attraction to material things is very strong. Then it's very difficult to progress in that case. Continual association of devotees, that increases faith.
Like you said yesterday in the because of the bad association, they are committing offenses.
Yeah, well, yeah, and bad association, the likelihood of offenses is more, because bad people are more offensive.
If we are making offenses,
Well, it depends on the offenses. The Vaishnava aparadha is difficult to get rid of by itself. Therefore, you have to get the forgiveness of the Vaishnava, etc. If you don't, then somehow it becomes very difficult to get rid of. And you approach him, and if you ask forgiveness, he doesn't forgive, then all you can do is continue the process of chanting. And then after a long time, the effect dissipates, like having a serious disease and you keep taking the medicine, nothing seems to happen for a long time. And then eventually a little effect is there and you get a little taste for eating, etc. And gradually you get a little stronger and a little stronger. So it may be a very difficult process if the aparadha is serious and the person doesn't forgive. In most cases, it won't be so serious if one rectifies the situation earlier.
But you were talking in the car, worshipping Tulasi,
many offenses is made, maybe after 8 or 10 years, naturally the intensity of their taking is to not be there, the intensity will not be similar.
Well, may or may not be, depending on the offense and depending on what happened after that. In some cases, it may appear 50 years later, even the effect. As in the case of Bharat, it surfaced when he was very old. Then he remembered a deer instead of remembering the Supreme Lord as a result of some aparad long, long ago. So the effect may be far. And the effects of aparads continue into bhava stage. Karmas are wiped out in asakti stage, but the effects of aparadas continue into bhava stage. So it means they can remain for quite a long time. Well, the effects may still last. Just like we have karmas and they appear many years later like that. So the offense may have occurred, 50 years ago, and then finally the result manifests later on.
Well, is it right to see kirtan in the modes of nature? Some says that the kirtan are in different modes, like passionate kirtan, they say sati kirtan.
Well, we have bhakti in the mode, Kapila has described bhakti in the different modes, tamasic bhakti and rajasic bhakti and sattvic bhakti. That doesn't mean bhakti is sattvic, it means of course there's a contamination of material modes, that's all. Well, actually, they're eternal. It's only a lila. They're Shaktivesh avatars, so they're not even normal persons.
And their being impersonalist also is part of the lila?
Yeah. They're not impersonalist as mayavadis, because a mayavadi offends the Lord by saying the Lord's form is not real. So they don't do that. As Sukadeva also was sort of an impersonalist but not a mayavadi, so therefore he became a devotee later on. So actually the Kumaras actually are in Shantarasa, which is above Jnana in a sense, but they preach Jnana.
यंत्रा श्री शिशुपद पादुकम की जय हरिवंश वन महाराज की जय हरिवंश ऐसी भक्तिवंत संस्कृत प्रभुपाद की जय गुरु प्रमाणंद
Ready.
Quickly, wait till I close this.